nominare sì. mia madre.
Sì, hai ragione.
Perché lei ha detto nel camerino, volevo. Non
c'è problema. Detto?
Non ti permettere mai più, mai più. Ok? Va mai più!
Va bene!
Mai più!
Antonio, va bene!
Ma mia madre!
Va bene, Antonio!
Mai!
The Italians have landed. Brash, bold, and often bizarre, contemporary Italian society is bursting into Australian living rooms through cable TV, around-the-clock radio programming, and the internet. More than a century after the first waves of immigrants left Italy behind, today the diaspora is lapping it up, embracing a culture that seems light years away from the small pre-industrial towns many of them left in the 1950s. And there's another side to this 21st century Italian invasion. A political system infamous for its unstable governance has gone global. Today, the political elites in Rome see the massive expatriate groupings as an opportunity. They can be co-opted to promote the Italian brand name, from coffee and pasta to mopeds and cars, and more importantly, they can be harvested for the only thing that matters in politics, their votes. Now, if you play your cards right in a far-flung Little Italy, you can make or break a government in Rome. Hello, I'm James Paniki. I'm a Radio National journalist. I'm an Australian citizen resident in Melbourne. And by birth, I'm also an Italian citizen who can vote in an Italian election. Background Briefing this week tells the story of how Italian political parties have been allowed to colonise immigrant communities all over the world. It's a story of passions aroused.
I was kneeling at his feet in the hall of a hotel in Toronto, Canada, begging him, please, don't do this to us.
Of deals made and deals broken.
That agreement fell through immediately for the simple reason that they did not keep their side of the bargain.
In Australia, Italian politics were played out in the corridors of Canberra.
It seemed to me quite wrong to have political constituencies of other countries in our country.
Sends the board inside. Here's Farina. And in the ranks of our sporting champions.
Frank Farina has scored the goal.
The story begins in March 2006, when, for the first time, the 3.5 million Italian citizens living abroad were granted the right to vote in an Italian general election. This was a huge experiment. There's never been anything like it anywhere in the world.
Abbiamo qui i candidati dell'Unione per le prossime elezioni. Abbiamo l'onore di avere le elezioni.
At a campaign launch far from Rome, in the once most Italian of Melbourne suburbs, Calton, local candidates are presenting themselves for election as part of a coalition of Italian centre-left parties. And the candidate speeches are tailor-made for an audience perhaps more familiar with recent Australian political history.
Il terzo slogan che vorremmo proporvi è quello che è legato un po' ai ricordi della campagna laburista qui quando vinse Gough Whitlam, It's Time.
The third slogan that we'd like to present to you is the one which is tied to our memory of the Labour Party's election campaign when Gough Whitlam won. In other words, it's time. It's now time to change Italy. And the best way of changing Italy today is to send the Berlusconi government packing. And we have a great opportunity to do that, because it's possible that the representatives elected overseas could be crucial to the creation of the next government.
The speaker is Marco Ferdi, a former Italian communist now living in Melbourne, and his words prove prophetic. Italy's centre-left government, elected in 2006, was indeed given life and ultimately killed off by the votes of a handful of expatriate Italians. and make a mental note of the Australian Labor Party references in this speech. It's an indication of a fierce power struggle between Italian and Australian politics, the details of which have only come to light now.
The federal government of John Howard, which is a conservative government, has created laws which aim to make us regress, be it in terms of our rights, the rights of workers, the rights of women, the rights of citizens. The same thing is happening in Europe where conservatives govern. And our representation of those who will be elected from this moment places itself at your service, with humility, with determination, and the professionalism that I believe all of you here today acknowledge. Thank you.
A chi ordinerà queste intercettazioni, 5 anni di carcere, a chi le eseguirà, 5 anni di carcere.
Esci dalla gamma, il mondo è tuo, prendilo, non ti chiederanno se ne vuoi un po', conquistalo, pigliatelo, dico il tuo di diritto, non ti chiederanno se ne vuoi un po'.
In 2006 I received my postal ballots in a big white envelope. It was the first time I'd been offered a chance to exercise my full democratic rights as an Italian citizen living abroad. Like many Australian-born Italian Australians, my Italianità, or sense of Italianness, didn't go much beyond the banter with the baristas at Melbourne's Lygon Street cafe strip. My connection was with the politics of Australia. Australian-born Italian citizens, like me, now significantly outnumber Italian migrants. And the stereotype of the tomato-growing, thickly accented Italian-Australian is therefore outdated. But for this second generation, the unexpected gift of political enfranchisement in Italy wasn't universally welcomed. My daughter is 3. Every Saturday morning for the past 2 years, we've been coming to this Italian-language playgroup in Melbourne's Inner North. We sing songs, read books, draw pictures, and have a bit of a chat. The only rule is we all speak Italian. This playgroup is part of a strong trend among second-generation Italian Australians. They want to reclaim a language and culture their immigrant parents were often keen to shed as they rushed to assimilate during the 50s and 60s. These mums and dads are mainly Australian-born and tertiary educated, and they've inherited their parents' Italian citizenship.
My name's Carla. I'm Alessio and Lewis's mum.
And tell me, did you receive the ballots to vote in the Italian election?
No, I didn't, because I'm not registered in Australia. I'm still registered in Tokyo, where I used to live.
But did other members of your family receive the ballots?
Yep, my brother did.
And did he vote?
No, he didn't.
Why didn't he vote?
He didn't follow the election. He didn't know who to vote for, so he just didn't do it.
Hello, I'm Marina, Marcus's mother.
And did you vote?
No, I didn't. I didn't do enough research in order to be able to vote, so I didn't.
Is it true that you were contacted by a political party in Italy as well?
Yes, I was. I was contacted by someone from Silvio Berlusconi's party.
And what did he talk to you in Italian, I presume?
Yes, he did.
And what did he say?
He just introduced himself, his name, and the party that he represented, and just wanted me to be aware of who he was. It took me by surprise, and I just, you know, listened and took on board what he was saying, and that was it.
And didn't vote.
And didn't vote, yeah.
Thanks, though. At my usual Lygon Street cafe, the guys behind the counter have taken full advantage of their new rights. They're interested in both Italian and Australian politics. Pasquale, you're an Italian citizen, aren't you?
Yes, I am.
Did you vote in the 2006 and 2008 elections?
Both elections, yes, I did.
And did you feel that you were across the issues, that you knew who you were voting for?
I think a lot of us abroad are struggling still to find out exactly what either party stands for. As a matter of fact, having been in Italy in the last 6 to 7 months and during the last campaign between Veltroni and Berlusconi, I strongly believe that a lot of the people themselves in Italy were struggling to believe or to understand what either party stood for.
I've decided to ride into the city to meet up with a Melbourne barrister I've known for a few years now. He follows Italian politics but has chosen not to vote. I wanted to find out why.
Claudio Bozzi, did you receive your electoral ballots?
Yes, I did.
And did you vote?
No, I read them and threw them out.
Why wouldn't you exercise your democratic right as an Italian citizen?
Well, I think citizenship has a number of elements to it, and one of them is, of course, participation. And I don't feel that I participate in the Italian political process very closely. I'm an extraterritorial voter if I do vote, and I think territoriality is still very closely associated with citizenship. I don't know what's going on there. I try and keep abreast of things, and believe me, I would love to be able to influence the outcome of an election, especially some of the recent ones, but nevertheless, there's an element of responsibility, and if I don't in fact feel the benefits or the effects of the electoral process, what right do I have to vote?
Long before Sergio's parents, other Italians have been coming to Australia as settlers. These pioneers were among the first from Italy. They founded a farming settlement near Lismore in New South Wales.
From the 1870s on, people began leaving their impoverished Italian towns in droves in search of a better life overseas. By the early 1900s, about 14 million people had left. Today, there are more people of Italian descent outside of Italy than within, and many of those migrants left nothing but an Italian surname passed down through the generations to link them to their ancestral homeland. For others, like the more recent post-war migrants to Australia, the link with Italian culture and language, and with the country itself, is much stronger.
Montecitorio, dopo la consulta e la costituente, accoglie oggi la Camera legislativa. Dopo un breve saluto del presidente provvisorio Longhena, la seduta è dedicata all'elezione del presidente della Camera. Risulta eletto Gronchi con 314 voti.
Italy became a republic after World War II, but the new constitution said nothing about the democratic rights of Italians living abroad. And there was a political reason for that. Italian-Australian academic and author at Swinburne University, Bruno Mascitelli.
There was this stigma attached to immigrants that left, and of course they left primarily for economic reasons, and that is that they were from rural backgrounds, peasants, villages, and in that sense there was this embodiment that somehow they carried a conservative ideology, that they were very open to what you might call fatherland issues, very conservative in their traditions, pro-family, very religious, and somehow attached to the Italian state. And what studies have shown since then are that by and large migrants of all kinds, when they go to a new land, slowly begin to adapt some of the political behaviour and characteristics of their new homeland rather than carry completely all of the baggage from their past life.
It wasn't till 6 years after the end of World War II that Australia opened its doors again to Italian migration on a big scale. This time, they came in their thousands. For its part, Australia, like their relatives, was glad to receive them, along with other migrants from Europe.
The myth of the ultra-conservative expatriate Italian described by Bruno Mascitelli was one of the reasons the Italian Parliament never seriously considered allowing expats to exercise their right to vote. Part of the problem was that as Italian democracy came close to collapse in the 1960s and 70s, it was nearly impossible to build a cross-party consensus. When Prime Minister Aldo Moro was kidnapped and later killed, the political turmoil reached a head.
GR1, edizione straordinaria.
Il presidente della Democrazia Cristiana Aldo Moro rapito a Roma stamane all'uscita dalla sua abitazione.
However, by the 1990s, two of Italy's largest foundation parties, the Socialists and the Christian Democrats, had imploded. In 1993, former Italian Prime Minister Bettino Craxi was pelted with coins as he left a Roman hotel. The message was clear. The electorate was sick of corruption. illegal party funding scandals had forced an entire generation of Italian politicians out of office. Suddenly, the time was right to get expatriate voting rights back on the agenda. And one politician in particular was ready to seize the day. Enter from the far right, Mirko Tremaglia. In the 1990s, he was already an aging politician.
Scusi ancora il disturbo, sono il Panichi dall'Australia.
Mirko Tremaglia is the architect of the Italian expatriate vote. But today he's old and very unwell and rarely leaves his home, from which he spoke to me by phone.
It was a great battle, and it was won thanks to the intervention of five or six constitutional experts who thought that it would be possible to have overseas residents vote and be elected.
Mirko Tremaglia now remembers little of how the vote for overseas citizens came about, and is unable to record more than a short conversation. But although his voice may now be fading, his political legacy remains strong. Professor of International Relations at the American University in Rome, James Walston.
He's now in his 80s, I think, and he had fought for this for a long time, probably for three reasons, I think, and this is, some of them he's made explicit, some he hasn't made explicit. One, in the hope, the presumption that Italians abroad would be right-wing and would have some sort of nostalgia for fascism in the 30s and would therefore support his party. But that wasn't the only reason at all. Secondly, I think in order to increase the influence of Italy as part of a foreign policy decision, if you have millions of people abroad who are linked to your country, you can put forward your national interests by using them as well as by using traditional diplomatic methods. And the third reason is a more sentimental one, the idea that somehow all the people who left were forced to leave. They were forced to leave for economic reasons, and therefore Italy owes them something. And by giving them the vote, there is a sort of reparation being granted to the people who were forced to leave either many generations ago or in the recent past.
Professor James Walston from the American University in Rome. In 2000, Mirko Tremaglia had a big win. With the benefit of cross-party support, he was able to push through Parliament the constitutional amendment required to allow expat Italians to vote. Yet the victory marked the beginning of a drawn-out struggle over the voting model that would be adopted. Today, Background Briefing can reveal that Italian parties and their representatives abroad ignored the reservations of other governments, particularly Canada and Australia, and imposed a complex and controversial electoral system on expat communities.
Buongiorno a tutti. E diamo inizio ai lavori. Ma non c'è Maria Rosa.
The General Council for Italians Abroad holds regular meetings just like this one.
Tu non devi spostare.
The council is known by its Italian acronym CGM. It's a body dominated by first-generation immigrants, and every member of the council has links to one of the many Italian political parties. When Italy's parliament granted expatriate Italians the right to vote, the CGE immediately began to campaign for an electoral model which would suit its members. They wanted expatriate constituencies which would elect Italian citizens who lived overseas. They also demanded a system which would prevent Italian politicians from moving abroad, specifically to run as expatriate candidates. They got exactly what they wanted, and it was no surprise when many CGE members were among the first to be elected under the new rules.
That started to take form.
Silvana Mangione is a long-standing CGE member, and today she's the New York-based Deputy Secretary General for English-speaking countries.
Because the first thing we were asking for and claiming was that we wanted not only the right to vote, but we wanted the right to elect our own representatives, and we wanted our own representatives to be people residing abroad just like we are, because we were saying the Italian representatives, the Italian parliamentarians truly do represent us because of the Italian constitution, but they don't know anything about us. They don't know what our needs are and what our strengths are and the things that we can contribute to Italy and the things Italy should do in order to keep the very large Italian community abroad tied unto herself.
This is an important point, isn't it? Because Italians abroad and members of the CGIE in particular didn't want what we might refer to as carpetbaggers. They didn't want people arriving from Italy simply to be their candidates. They wanted someone to be elected locally.
Absolutely. And this was a huge fight because the Honourable Tremaglia did not want to limit electability to people residing abroad.
Is that because he himself wanted to stand, presumably, in one of these overseas seats?
I am sure he wanted to. The dream of his life was probably to be elected abroad. But we slowly tried to convince him. I remember one afternoon, to the dismay of everybody looking over, I was kneeling at his feet in the hall of a hotel in Toronto, Canada, begging him, please don't do this to us. Because then the entire idea of direct representation of Italians residing abroad would go down the drain, would disappear, would become a mockery, a total mockery, and we would be at the receiving end of all the people who cannot be elected in Italy and therefore would come abroad in order to be elected by their own parties. We won. He understood it.
Silvana Mangione from the General Council of Italians Abroad. Subsequently, Mr. Tremaglia, who had since been appointed as Minister for Italians Abroad, decreed that the world be divided into four expatriate seats. He also announced that only expatriate Italians would be allowed to stand as candidates. But as the new electorate started to take shape, opposition began to mount, both within Italy and abroad. The country's political elites felt comfortable. They believed they were insulated from the changes because the number of the new parliamentarians would be insignificant, 18 out of a total 927. The small representation ensured the expatriate MPs and senators would never have much clout. This is important because if Italians had been granted a simple vote by correspondence, with their votes counted in the area of Italy where they had last resided, standing politicians would have faced an influx of votes which they could not have controlled. Mirko Tremaglia was aware of these fears and reassured Italy's parliamentarians that a simple postal vote would never happen. In fact, he said that if it were to occur, it would amount to a political distortion. That terminology aroused the suspicion of a highly influential figure, Italy's leading political scientist, Giovanni Sartori. Professor Sartori said the distortion argument had been made up by self-serving politicians and put the argument forcefully in his weekly column for Italy's leading newspaper, Corriere della Sera.
It's not even an argument, I mean, what the hell does that mean? If I'm born in Florence, I vote with the constituency in Florence. They did not want that to be disturbed because they had the feeling that they couldn't control that vote. They didn't know what would happen. They said, well, we create these Sputniks traveling around the world, and the vote that we control in our constituencies is not affected or disturbed by this extra vote from abroad.
For example, it's one thing to talk about someone coming from Florence because I suppose the Florentines overseas are probably 10 or 20 or 30 or 50,000. But if you're talking about a region like Sicily, we're talking literally about millions of people. And so ultimately what people would argue is that the outcome of elections could be decided by people who the politicians never get to see face to face or have no contact with. And that is what the whole concept of distortion is all about. Do you not accept that?
Well, the notion of distortion in the theory of representation has to be defined. What distortion is that? I mean, they said it, but I mean, the distortion is what they have created. That is, they have created a system in which there exists no sensible representative interest represented by these cross-world constituencies.
Professor Giovanni Sartori, who is now an academic at Columbia University in New York. His arguments gained a large following in Italy.
Dalla Svizzera, vorrei segnalarvi delle irregolarità sulle prossime elezioni.
Meanwhile, opposition to the overseas seats was also building outside the country. Second-generation politicians of Italian descent in both Canada and Australia began to question the Italian government's motives. One prominent opponent was Sergio Marchi. He was a Canadian MP who, in the 1990s, held several ministerial portfolios, including citizenship and immigration. He now works in Geneva.
And I thought if there were a million things for our two countries to do in the future, you know, granting a mechanism to elect a parliamentarian from Canada to sit in the Italian parliament, I think that would be 1,000,001. You know, if we have Italian citizens in Canada, my first obligation at the time as an elected Canadian representative would try to make them become Canadian citizens and become landlords of Canada rather than having them elect a member of parliament to represent somehow their views in the Italian parliament. No problem in terms of Italian citizens voting for politicians back home, but going to the degree of electing in Canada their own representatives, I just didn't think that made sense for a country like Canada.
Former Canadian government minister Sergio Marchi. In Australia, the most rigorous opposition to the proposed model came from Victorian state Labor MP Carlo Carli. Mr. Carli has declined Background Briefing's offer to discuss the vote. However, he did speak to me during a campaign event in 2006.
I mean, if we're going to have a vote, which was determined by the Italian government, then I think there is some obligation on the Italian government to assist in informing the electorate. Otherwise, it can't be a very democratic process.
And what about the issue of mixed loyalties? Does the fact that you're voting for an election in another country altogether undermine your sense of Australianness or your commitment to the Australian state?
I think that's a real risk in all of this. I don't think it does, but I think it possibly could. Fundamentally, that the issues that confront the Italian community here, issues of cultural identity, language, jobs, housing, aged services and all of that, are really state and federal government responsibility and local government responsibilities. And it's much more important that people take the interest in what's happening in Australian political life, because that's the one that actually influences their lives and the lives of their children.
However, while expressing opposition to the political mechanism, we can reveal that at the time, Carlo Carli was a significant player in the process of electing MPs to the Italian Parliament.
Sono un cittadino italiano residente in Inghilterra. Ho notato le seguenti irregolarità. Le schede non sono timbrate.
As criticism grew both in Italy and abroad, the architect of the vote, Mirko Tremaglia, was forced to fight a separate diplomatic battle. A handful of countries, among them Canada and Australia, were afraid that to have permanent residents, in many cases their own citizens, campaigning against one another as candidates for Italian parties could prove socially disruptive.
And it was in my briefing material.
Alexander Downer was Australia's foreign minister from 1996 to 2007.
The issue, I talked to the ambassador, the then ambassador, about it, and the advice of the department and of the post in Rome itself was that we should oppose this whole idea of overseas constituencies being created in the Italian parliament. I thought the department was right. It seemed to me quite wrong to have political constituencies of other countries in our country.
Why would you have been concerned by that?
Well, I think it gets, in a sense, to the sort of political integrity of Australia, that you have campaigns for foreign elections, not just being conducted in Australia in and of themselves, because that can happen, but you have candidates from Australia as well, campaigning in our country for the votes of a section of our community. So It creates an untidy political situation where there are people, in this case, who would be dual nationals, who are voting in Australian elections, are also finding themselves voting in Italian elections, are subjected to campaigns by candidates in Australia to get elected to the Italian parliament. these people are potentially determining the destiny of the Italian government. Now, I think, you know, the Italian elections should be conducted in Italy. And my view then, and it remains my view, is that Italians or people who are dual nationals should be able to have postal votes and they can vote in constituencies in Italy, but not create a constituency in Australia.
Former Foreign Minister Alexander Downer. But these strong reservations weren't enough to change the minds of the Italians. Background Briefing has spoken to a number of people who were close to the decision-making in the Department of Foreign Affairs, both in Rome and in Canberra, and accounts of what happened differ greatly. Some support Mr. Downer's recollections, suggesting the Italians ambushed Australia and Canada by presenting them with a fait accompli. Others believe Australia and Canada were placated by a major Italian concession, in which Mr. Tremaglia ruled out the creation of country-specific electorates. In other words, there wouldn't be a seat in Italy's parliament called Australia. Melbourne academic Bruno Mascitelli has been able to piece the story together with the use of freedom of information legislation.
However, at the 11th hour, again, we need to thank Mirko Tremaglia, who ambushed not only the Australian government, but in fact his own Ministry of Foreign Affairs, coming up with the proposal of four specific constituencies around the world. And initially, the area that involved Australia was not called Oceania, it was called Australasia. The Australian government protested at this name and asked that it be altered to a more generic term, recommending a number of options, including Oceania, which eventually the Italian government accepted.
Bruno Mascitelli, the mastermind of the expatriate voting system, Mirko Tremaglia, put his reputation on the line twice. In the first instance, he was able to claim victory by winning over wavering foreign governments. In the second instance, he suffered a most humiliating defeat. He had assured his post-fascist party, Alleanza Nazionale, that he'd delivered them a majority of the new overseas electorates. But the myth of the ultra-conservative expatriate Italians was brutally exposed. Not one far-right candidate was elected in the foreign seats. In fact, Italian citizens living abroad have voted overwhelmingly for the centre-left. For all of his obvious ability as a political negotiator, Mirko Tremaglia failed miserably when it came to the essential skill of understanding the electorate. This is Background Briefing on ABC Radio National. I'm James Panichi, and today we're looking at how Italy's politics have colonised Italian communities around the world. Per te è finito ormai, ed ora tocca a me. Bastava solo un po' d'aiuto, sai,
non hai risposto mai. E ritengo che gli italiani all'estero siano persone buone, di buon senso, capaci, che sono state flessibili, non solamente dalla prima alla quinta generazione.
When Italy's political parties agreed to the new electoral model, they did it on the assumption that they'd be the ones controlling the process, and the salary for a successful candidate would make it worthwhile. An Italian MP can earn up to $200,000 Australian a year after tax. However, in 2006, Australian-based political activists had come to the conclusion that Rome shouldn't be running the show, and that led to some high-profile clashes at the heart of Australia's two largest Italian communities.
Excuse me, I'm looking for the mayor's office.
Ballan City Council is one of Melbourne's biggest and most ethnically diverse municipalities. The mayor of Moreland is Joe Caputo. Earlier this year, I obtained a copy of a secret political deal. It was signed, among others, by Joe Caputo. You can view it at the Background Briefing website. It's dated February the 17th, 2006. It's in Italian and it reads like a standard Labour Party factional deal. But who were the factions? On the one hand, there was something called the Italian-Australian Labour Network. On the other, there are two centre-left political parties from Italy. As well as Joe Caputo, the deal was signed by Victorian State Labour MP Carlo Carli, Marco Fedi, the Italian politician we heard from earlier, and Italian-Australian journalist Nino Randazzo. Marco Fedi and Nino Randazzo had been chosen by Italy's centre-left to run as candidates in the 2006 election. The deal doesn't actually say that the Italian-Australian Labor Network will have the right to control the pre-selection process in future elections, but that's what it means. Joe Caputo is the only signatory who has agreed to discuss the deal with Background Briefing.
The 2006 deal that we made with the candidates for the Italian election at the time, Marco Fedi and Nino Randazzo, was to try to get both to come to an agreement that they needed to be much more accountable to the local Italian community. They needed to be, you know, we needed to actually set up mechanisms and structures to ensure that future candidates were determined right here in Australia, not in Rome.
So what this deal amounted to was an attempt to set up a pre-selection process to select those candidates which would ultimately be running for parliament in Italy.
Sure, the deal was, you know, the agreement or the accord was to do just that, so that we would have determined who were the candidates for that election in 2006 and subsequent election that would have taken after that.
But why would Italian politicians, albeit Australian-based, need to sign a deal with the left faction of the Victorian ALP? It's a story of mistrust which goes all the way back to the Labour Party split of the 1950s. Nino Randazzo, now an Italian senator, is a former seminarian from Sicily. He's a playwright and the long-term editor of Melbourne Italian newspaper Il Globo.
This is a mafia type of organisation. Is this correct to your knowledge?
Well, I wouldn't call this organisation mafia for one simple reason. Every criminal, regardless of his nationality, can be called a mafia man.
In 1965, he ran as a Democratic Labour Party candidate in the Victorian state elections. This decision made him plenty of enemies in the ALP, particularly among the Italian-Australian Labour activists he had been so close to. So when Nino Randazzo was chosen as a candidate by the Italian left, Italian-Australian members of the Labour Party, including Joe Caputo, wanted to run against him. That created a real concern on the other side of the world, and a left-wing Italian power broker sitting in the European Parliament started to make calls. He was insisting that a deal be made. The politician eventually contacted Victorian State Labour MP Carlo Carli, and remember, Carlo Carli is the person we heard from earlier who questioned whether the electoral system was the right one for expatriate communities. So, a Victorian MP and a Melbourne councillor met in an ALP electorate office in a bid to decide who should run for Parliament in Italy. After a very tense meeting, a deal was signed, and a key element of the agreement was that the Labour Party members throw their political expertise behind the Italian left's campaign in Australia. Yet the moment Nino Randazzo and Marco Fedi had been elected, they reneged on the agreement, claiming the Labour Party members hadn't provided them with enough assistance during the campaign. Here's Nino Randazzo.
Their agreement fell through immediately at the end of their campaign for the simple reason that they did not keep their side of the bargain. They did not help us in any way at all. And I didn't see their face during the whole campaign. Therefore, I felt an obligation, moral or otherwise, to stick to that particular agreement.
Nino Randazzo. Academic Bruno Mascitelli believes the deal reflected an initial lack of familiarity with the way Italian parties do business.
Again, I would return back to the actual clauses that they agreed on, which I think were probably the most interesting and reflect a real misunderstanding of on all sides of the ability to being able to enact such an agreement where possibly as a form of blackmail to keep the candidates under control, that there would not be a counter-proposal of candidates, which in 2008 in actual fact occurred. It was a form of accountability for the community in which the respective winners, in this case Marco Fedi and Nino Randazzo, would be accountable to their community and not to any other authority.
Bruno Mascitelli's point is that the deal was a plan to keep control of the pre-selection of candidates in Australia. The plan failed.
C'è un grande sogno che vive in noi. Siamo la gente della libertà. Presidente, siamo con te. Meno male che Silvio c'è.
While members of the Victorian ALP were fighting to control Italian centre-left politics in Australia, the might of media magnate Silvio Berlusconi was about to strike down two of Australia's most high-profile sportsmen who had been chosen in Australia as centre-right candidates.
Since 1982, at least, when Campo became a wallaby, the way a fountain goes to work in the park.
A group of New South Wales Forza Italia members had come up with a plan. They reckoned they could win if they could find two candidates who would be instantly recognised, particularly by the disengaged second and third generation Italians in Australia.
His family came to Australia from a tiny village, not 20 minutes of winding road from here. Today, the Campeses return to Padova for what's officially just another test match between Australia and Italy.
Sets the ball inside, here's Farina. Farina with a great chance for Australia.
Frank Farina is a former Socceroo and David Campese is an Australian rugby legend. Both had Italian citizenship, both had played in Italy and spoke Italian. A Forza Italia meeting in Sydney voted to accept the Campese-Farina ticket, although there was some opposition, which will become significant later. The candidates' names were sent to Forza Italia headquarters in Rome and Campese and Farina were told to prepare for the campaign. Then the Italians stepped in. A Forza Italia power broker from Milan called Dario Rivolta overruled the pre-selection. He chose instead two candidates who had voted against the Campese-Farina ticket, Brisbane builder Luigi Casagrande and Sydney property developer Teresa Restifa. Dario Rivolta is no longer in politics, but when I rang him, he said he remembered clearly how the Australian candidates had been selected.
Persone che dovevano correre sotto la bandiera del partito, era naturale che fosse la sede centrale del partito.
Dario Rivolta says Mr. Casagrande was chosen in part because he was both willing and able to spend money on his transcontinental election campaign, and therefore he wouldn't be a burden on party coffers.
Ma anche il più capace di poter impostare una campagna elettorale importante. Per quanto riguarda la signora Restifa.
As for Ms. Restifa, Dario Rivolta says a Sicilian Forza Italia power broker from the city of Palermo, current Senate President Renato Schifani, lobbied hard for her to be the candidate. Ms. Restifa, who was born and raised in Palermo, has confirmed to Background Briefing that Senator Schifani had been a friend since childhood. However, she says that didn't play a part in her selection by Forza Italia. Mr. Rivolta's revelations suggest Forza Italia's choice of candidates had little to do with the ideals of giving expatriate communities a voice in Italy's parliament. They also suggest the party was ready to lose a seat or two rather than to hand over the pre-selection process to expatriate Italians.
Sono il senatore Nino Randazzo, candidato del Partito Democratico al Senato della Repubblica. Vi ho rappresentato con impegno
dall'onorevole Giovanni Scroto.
Da quando sono arrivato in Australia da emigrato, ho dedicato tutta la mia energia.
Sono nato per me, come fanno un po' tutti. Sembra sempre un po' troppo quello che non ho.
Many of the problems which emerged in the 2006 poll remained during the 2008 election. Background Briefing has spoken to a number of people who were eligible to vote but didn't receive their ballots. Others were contacted by party representatives urging them to fill out the ballots of their children and relatives, which in Italy would be unconstitutional. These practices have left many Australian-born Italian citizens disillusioned and uncertain about whether they should take part. But the prominent New York-based expat Silvana Mangione says that it's probably best that the international electoral system be left to the first generation. She argues that it's the migrants who should determine the expatriate representation.
The first generation people will never die out. As we know, there is an enormous amount of mobility, quote unquote, throughout the world, and the recipients are especially the English-speaking countries outside of Europe. There are plenty of first-generation young Italians arriving in New York, constantly arriving in the United States. States working at the university as managers, as researchers, etc.
Sure, but so, would these people be able to represent older, more established communities that might have been in their countries since the early 1900s?
That's what we are trying to do. We are trying to put them in touch with the other, quote-unquote, emigration, or the other exponents of the older emigration, because I think that there is an enormous wealth of intelligence in all the different generations, including the ones that arrived in the immediate post-Second World War period in many of our countries.
Silvana Mangione from the General Council of Italians Abroad. And that point of view, that the first generation Italian migrants, whether they be those from the 1950s or recently arrived professionals, should be the ones to stand as candidates, is opposed by younger overseas-born political activists. One of them is Gaetano Greco, who spoke to me in a shopping centre in Melbourne's Lygon Street.
Italians, and after all, first generation Italians that are out here, that recently come out here, they usually don't understand the issues confronting both the first, second and third generation, because they come with a different baggage, a different experience. So how could they properly represent the history and the social issues associated with that early wave of migration?
You know what they'd say to you, though, that is that in order to get around the many cultural complexities of Italian society and Italian politics, you need to be born there, you need to have grown up with it. What would you say to that?
But how complex is Italian society? How complex is Italian politics? I mean, politics is complex all over the place. And after all, when we go back, what was the actual idea behind these parliamentarians elected overseas? Was to represent the issues facing those people who are overseas. It's not to actually represent so much the issues facing people that are in Italy. So I just don't see the logic behind that type of reasoning.
Gaetano Greco. The big fear of political elites in Italy was realised in 2008. The centre-left government of Prime Minister Romano Prodi fell after a narrow vote in the Senate. One of those who didn't show up to the sitting to support the government was Luigi Pallaro, a senator from Argentina who had been elected in 2006. When he first arrived in Rome, Pallaro was the only expatriate politician to have been elected as an independent. He had immediate access to government campaign reimbursements and didn't have to plead with the parties for funding. He answered to his communities in South America and was able to steer clear of Rome's political machinations. He owed no one any favours. In short, he was the most unusual Italian politician around. He was his own man, and literally out of reach in his electorate on the other side of the world. After all the wheeling and dealing to establish an expatriate voting system, momentum in Rome is now building against it. The problem is, it won't be easy to dismantle. Parliament will need another figure like Mirko Tremaglia to garner cross-party support, this time to abolish the international electorates. And in the current climate, that appears unlikely. But when it happens, legislators will once again face the challenge of how to manage and control the great, unwieldy Italian diaspora.
156. Senatori contrari, 161. Senatori. No. Per favore, togliete quella bottiglia là. Non stiamo mica all'osteria. Prego, lasci il senatore Gramazio. Su. Senatore Gramazio.
Background Briefing's coordinating producer is Linda McGuinness. Technical production by Jenny Parsonage. Research, Anna Whitfeld. Executive producer is Chris Bullock. I'm James Paniki, and you're listening to ABC Radio National.
All this month on Into the Music, we're on the wide open road.
Australian bands have a reputation for being amongst the best live acts in the world, forged by a culture of playing live and touring hard.
It's the sound of an Aussie pub the kind of whole attitude and tone is totally Australian.
You know, your bread and butter was working in these places 5-6 nights a week.
From punk to hip-hop, pub rock to pub techno, sounds and styles may come and go, but one thing that stayed pretty constant for Australian bands is the need to do it loud and do it live.
All the gigs were scary for Midnight Oil back then. I mean, the safest place was arguably the stage.
They'd be out in the crowd, they'd break their wrists jumping off the stage. It'd just be like, go for it.
You know, it'd be dripping off the ceiling.
We're right out the front, so screaming and dancing.
Wide Open Road on Into the Music. You can stream this program from the Radio National website.
So pumped to be here.